Okay. This is the NLA Hams Net. Every week at this time, we hold the NLA Hams Net at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Harry,
and
did
we
you
things.
Recording?
Yes, go ahead.
I can't. Huh? But someone needs to start the recording, right?
Oh, they started it before you got here.
Oh, I didn't hear that this call is being recorded. I didn't hear that part.
Oh, yeah, I turned it on exactly at 8 o'clock.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. I
no,
didn't hear
okay.
that.
It's okay.
Go ahead.
And I think he was 30 seconds early, but that's okay. I don't have my computer on yet. So, anyway. This is the NLA Hamsnet. I am Terry from Colorado, or otherwise known as K-I-0-R-E. I am a ham. And we're kind of going through roughly the ARRL Ham Radio License Manual, third edition, which is good through June 2018. So it's got to be about a little over a year left on it. And I want to draw attention to page 3-7, because that's kind of where we left off last week. We were talking to AC/DC, and then I turned the page, and oh, there are some beautiful pictures on 3-6. Of what a DC signal looks like and what an AC signal looks like. And the DC is always going the same direction. The current always goes the same direction. It might be on or it might be higher or it might be lower, but it's always going the same direction. Whereas on an AC circuit, alternating current, whereas DC is direct current, but on alternating current, all the current goes one way, and then it slows down and stops, and then goes back the other way in the circuit, and slows down, stops, and goes back the other way. And depending, that's one cycle. When it goes one direction, stops, goes the other direction, and then stops and begins to go in the one direction again, that's one cycle. And one cycle, your house current is about 50 or 60 cycles per second. In the U.S., it's mainly 60 cycles per second, or 60 hertz. We use hertz as a term instead of cycles per second anymore. Now, as it does that, it goes through components. And I'm on page 3-7 now, and there's a box at the top that shows what different things are. And there's a bunch of resistors. And you have big resistors that handle big currents and small resistors that hold smaller currents. In other words, the size of the resistor isn't dependent upon how big the how much resistance the resistor puts in there. It's how much, well, not necessarily, but it's how much current you expect to go across that resistor. That one at the top of page 3-7 in figure 3.7 is probably a 1 or 5 or 10 ohm resistor. But it is expected to hold a lot of current. So it's wrapped around, it's a wire wound wrapped around a ceramic core. And it might have air in the middle of it, I'm not sure. But it's definitely will take a lot of current going through it. As anything that has current going through it, it gets hot. So the more current you have going through something, the hotter it gets. And your little resistors usually have, 4.7 mega ohms or 50 mega ohms. So there's lots and lots of resistance. And so there's only a tiny little current going through there. And because of that, they don't handle much of a voltage drop, so therefore they're not going to handle much of a current. And that's why you can build them so small. You build resistors based upon how much resistance you need and how much current you think it will carry in a particular circuit. Now, we can go back to Ohm's Law, and we've talked about that before. And you just look for the resistance you need. If you know that you're going to put 12 volts in this circuit and that it's going to carry, a tenth of an amp. Well, 12 volts is a tenth of an amp. That's about a watt. Just multiply them out. It's about a watt. So you need a 1 or a 2 watt resistor. Often in circuits, you get even less than that. So I want to say something to the side here right now, and that is that lots of people think that there's a lot of power going through this, and it's really dangerous. On most radios, especially on the receiver side, you're working with very, very tiny voltages and very small modifications to those voltages when they're modulated. And because of that, you're working with small voltages and you're looking for the differences. Might be fast. We were talking about talking on the UHF band, which is 420 to 460 megahertz. Let's just say you're on 450. 450 megahertz means that it's an AC flow of current. It's going one way and then it's going the other way. But also it's doing that. It's flowing one way and then the other way and then back the other way. 450 million times a second. Well, as you can see, that's a lot of current going back and forth, and it's going back and forth very, very quickly. So that's taken down into some standard frequencies inside, and then it begins to demodulate the signal and turn it into something that you can hear. We can get into that later. Back to page 3-7, figure 3.8, shows some examples of capacitors. And some capacitors, most probably, have a plus or a minus one. One lead is considered the anode and one is considered the cathode, and you're going to put them appropriately into the plus or minus in the circuit. And a lot of capacitors, not most, but a lot of capacitors, have no indication as to which way they go. Now, capacitors, you kind of got to watch how much voltage they're allowed to have on them. So it'll say, like this biggest one in figure 3.8, it's 470 microfarads at 50 volts. You want to ensure that whatever circuit you put it in, that there's going to be 50 volts or less. In other words, 50 volts will be the maximum voltage that goes through there, and it won't go beyond that at all. So usually you're taking a 12-volt circuit and you put a 25 or a 50-volt capacitor in there, so it'll hold the voltage without any problem. Again, you can throw some formulas at it, figuring on how fast it'll degrade, and we covered some of those formulas before. Maybe not specifically how to compute capacitance or capacitive reactance, but it's there. And I'm not going to try and do it on this phone call. I think that would be suicide, and I'm already half dead. Okay, it's... did I get that? Capacitors store electrical energy and electric field. And that's the thing. Let's see. We talked earlier about, and this is just a refresh, that capacitors store an electrical charge and an electrical field. Coils or inductors store a magnetic charge and a magnetic field. So they're going to store some, let's see, how do I put this? It builds up a magnetic field, and an inductor will resist the change in that magnetic field. So at first, when you put a DC current on, it looks like it's ready to go all the way through. And as soon as you put that DC on there, it establishes very quickly establishes a magnetic field in there going one direction. And if you try and make it back and forth, it resists that AC. but it shows open to DC. It'll go right in there real quick. Capacitors are similar. You put an electrical charge on them, and they start storing up a charge, but they'll reach a limit where they won't hold any more charge, and then they're looking to dissipate. Okay. Okay, there's on the next page, 3-8, figure 3.9, you see a bunch of coils, and there's open air coils on the top, and coils of some kind of core on the bottom. And even on the lower right-hand corner, it says in the caption that that's a wire-wound toroid core. Toroids are kind of cool. I don't understand them completely yet. But you take a donut, a magnetic donut, and you wrap the toroid around it, and it really makes it more effective. And I'll just say that much about it because I don't know that much about them. Oh, okay. There's also a blue box up at the top of the Ohm, and it's called Ohm and Faraday, or Ohm and Farad and Henry. Oh my! And they're electrical units. Let's see, they're a measure of almost all named for scientists and experimenters. For example, George Ohm, 1787 to 1854, discovered the relationship between current voltage and resistance that now bears his name, Ohm's Law. As well as the unit of resistance, the ohm. Table 3.1 lists units as well, and the trailblazers, let's see, as well as the unit of resistance, the ohm. Table 3.1 lists units and the trailblazers for whom they are named. So we have ampere, which measures current, and that was named after André-Marie Ampère. And Coulomb, which is a charge, Charles Augustin Coulomb, a farad, which is capacitance, named after Michael Faraday, a Henry, it's inductance, named after Joseph Henry, a hertz, which is a measure of frequency, number of cycles per second, named after Heinrich Hertz. Ohm is resistance, and we talked about that, George Simon Ohm. A watt is a power, named after James Watt. And a volt, which is voltage, Alessandro Giuseppe Antonio Anastasio Volta. All these guys lived in the latter part of the 18th century into the 19th century. Most of them made it, or they lived in the 19th century. Okay. Let's see. And it talks a little bit about variable and repetitive. You could actually make these variable. One of them in figure 3.9, the top left one, looks like it could be a variable resistor. The idea is you use a piece of carbon or a wire-wound resistor where the wire has a lot of resistance per unit length, and you put a sweep arm on it, and when you turn it one way, it's not going through much of that resistance material. And then you turn it the other way, it's going through a lot of it. So you're changing the resistance on that thing just by turning a knob. Your volume knob on everything that you own, just about. On computers, it's a different story. But on any, like a TV, or, well, it's not a TV anymore. Radios, most radios. Ham radios, you got a knob and you're turning the volume. What you're doing is you're making you're changing the resistance on a capacitor in there that allows more or less volume come out. Now it just touches on reactance and impedance. In a resistor, AC voltages and currents are exactly in step or in phase. As voltage increases, so does current and vice versa. In capacitors and inductors, the relationship between AC voltage and current is altered so that there is an offset in time between changes in one and changes in the other. as energy is stored then released. That means voltage and current have different a phase difference. Now, what does that mean? If you think of a DC circuit, it just goes straight through, and it's all direct. Ohm's law applies. When you use an AC circuit, the electricity is going one way and then coming back the other way. Well, because it's going one way and back the other way, capacitors and inductors pick up a new set of resistance, and it's called either capacitive reactance or inductive reactance. And notice we changed the word, the resistance in the circuit that they display, from resistance to reactance. There's a reason for that. Reactance is not exactly the same thing as resistance. Reactance is how much resistance in the circuit does this component cause in an AC circuit. And there's formulas for capacitive reactance and capacitive resistance. And it, you don't have to memorize the formula. Let's see, reactance from a capacitor is called capacitive reactance, and from an inductor, inductive reactance. The value of component's reactance depends on the amount of capacitance or inductance and the frequency of the AC current. Let me give you an idea. As you charge a capacitor, we're talking about AC circuit. As the electricity begins to flow, well, there's no charge on the capacitor, and it says, "Yeah, I'm gonna collect a charge. Give me," and it lets an AC signal pass. Then as the AC signal turns around and the current starts flowing the other way, capacitor says, oh, I can contribute that. Let me charge up the other direction, and it empties its entire charge. When a capacitor charges up, and I forgot to say this, so my apologies for getting out of sync, it at first lets the current pass quite a lot because it's storing up a charge. As it gets close to the value of its charge, like we were talking 470 microhenries a while ago. No, that was a microfarads. That's a measure of capacitance. When it reaches a charge of 470 microfarads, it then acts like a big block to electricity. And so you put a battery across a resistor or across a capacitor, it will charge up rather quickly, and then it won't charge anymore. It'll act like an open circuit. If the frequency and the voltage on an AC circuit goes through a capacitor, it depends on how fast it's reversing. And if the voltage is turning around and going the other way, like I was talking about, before the capacitor gets fully charged, then that point in the circuit looks almost like a short. It just goes right through. It's just like a wire. So it does. That's where the idea that a capacitor will stop DC because it lets it flow for a second or two until it's charged, and then it won't let it flow anymore. Whereas AC current on there, it'll just go right through, and it's going through there, and it looks like just another piece of wire. But it does have a reactance, because at some point, as that AC waveform is going one direction, that capacitor just does reach a certain charge. And I want to move to inductors for a moment. Inductors, the current starts through there, and it resists the building. So it looks like there's an open circuit there. But there's not. So you put a DC current on an inductor, it will at first look like there's no current whatsoever. But once you get to where that inductor has established its magnetic field as big as it's going to get on that DC current, it'll conduct straight through. It'll conduct and conduct and conduct all day long because it likes to see constant current. Okay? Then when you take off a DC, the current says, oh, I'm collapsing. My whole magnetic field is collapsing. So the inductor says, let's push some more. Maybe we'll get some more DC from that battery when they reconnect it. And in a flash of an eye, it will try to maintain its magnetic field, and the current will keep going through it because that magnetic field is collapsing. And if you study the shape of the wire and the coil and which way the current is flowing, you can kind of get an idea. And I won't go into that now because I can't show you on a board what I'm talking about, and it gets kind of confusing. Just realize that we measured the resistance of a capacitive current that has a capacitor in it with capacitive reactance. We measured the resistance in an AC circuit of a capacitor with capacitive reactance. We measured the resistance of an inductor in an AC circuit with inductive reactance. Now we're up to the, I didn't explain the AC signal on a inductor. If you take a compass and you use DC and you plug it into the terminals of a battery, it will establish a magnetic field, and that compass will swing around either south or north. If you then take it off and turn the battery around, you'll see that the other indicator on the compass, the other arm, will swing up because now your polarity on that inductance has changed. So it's like a little magnet. Some of you have built magnetic, my tongue gets tangled sometimes. Oh, some of you have built electromagnetics, maybe, by wire wrapping a wire tightly around a nail or something, putting a battery to it, and that nail will pick up iron just like a magnet. The nice thing is that when you take the current away, it will release its magnetic properties, and whatever you got it will fall down. And that's why you see these huge, round, flat, like a pancake, ends on some of these cranes at a scrapyard. They assume that the scrap they're doing is steel or iron, and they can put an electromagnetic there that's very strong. When they turn it on, all the stuff sticks to it. And then they can cover it, they carry it over to where they want to drop it for recycling or whatever, and then turn off the electromagnetic, and all that stuff falls down. And that's how you do that. Okay, so in AC current, something else is happening in that inductor. As the current starts up in one direction, it resists the flow of electrons until the magnetic field builds all the way up, and then it lets them through. Well, if it's going back AC, back and forth, if the cycles per second is faster than when it builds up an entire magnetic field, it's all the time fighting that thing. But it will take some. So what we have here is that if you think of current versus voltage, once you have that full magnetic field in there, then you've got a voltage established. Am I saying that wrong? I'm probably backwards. What they say is there's a phase difference on the other side of it that's 90 degrees out of phase, whether it's current or voltage, I got two lines. What we've been looking at is voltage signals in an AC wave, and I want you to think now about current signals. Now, in a piece of wire that you put an AC signal into, the current and voltage are almost identical. As the voltage pulls it one way, the current will flow that way. As the voltage turns around and pulls the wire, the electrons in a wire another way, well, the current will follow it, right? Almost instantaneously. But in capacitor and an inductor, you have capacitor reactants and inductive reactants, and things start doing something different. And what they do is that if you put an AC current on a capacitor, it kind of likes that, and it will let it pass through because it's not got a problem. And the current will go really fast until it gets fully charged. Well, if you're going back and forth, a capacitor looks like a piece of wire with nothing in it. But it does have something. All inductive reactants and all capacitor reactants have a frequency component. Depending upon what the frequency is, they either react a little bit stronger or a little bit weaker. So as you have a capacitive circuit, the current gets ahead of the voltage, because there's no voltage drop as long as it looks like a wire through there. In an inductive circuit, the voltage leads the current. And there's a nice little phrase that helps people remember that. And I'm going to tell it to you right now. You ready? Eli the Iceman. Eli has an L in the middle. And so that's an inductive circuit. And as you're talking about inductive reactants. So Eli the Iceman, C is a capacitive circuit. And the I and the E, so Eli, voltage E, electromotive force, leads current, which is the I part. And ice means, so Eli the Iceman is an inductive circuit. In an inductive circuit, an L-type circuit, voltage leads current by about 90 degrees. The ice part means in a capacitive circuit or a circuit with capacitive reactants, current leads voltage by about 90 degrees. Now, if I get any more than that, I don't know that I'll be able to do it over the phone. I wish I had something I could draw on. But anyway, are there any questions right now? Does anybody want to insert something and say, stop, time out, I don't want to go any further right now? Please call now. Okay. Now, the last thing it talks about on page 3-9 of the ARRL Technician Ham Radio License Manual Technician is resonance. And I've made this point several times before in all the other recordings that have been made. Everything has resonance. The effect of capacitive and inductive reactance on an AC current is different because of the opposite offset in time between voltage and current. Eli the Iceman. In a circuit with both capacitive and inductive reactance at some frequency, the two types of reactance will be equal and cancel each other out. This brings the AC current and voltage exactly back in step with each other. In other words, if you got current leading voltage, which is what you have in a capacitive circuit, and then you follow that with a compatible inductor of some kind that is roughly the same size, that inductor, Eli, the voltage will lead the current, whereas in the capacitor, it's the current leading the voltage. Well, they kind of work themselves out at that point, and the whole thing at resonance will look like a wire going through there. This brings the AC circuit voltage exactly back in step with each other, a condition called resonance. The frequency at which resonance occurs is the resonant frequency. And I can't stress that enough. Circuits that contain both capacitors and inductors will have at least one resonant frequency and are called resonant circuits or tuned circuits. If variable capacitors are used to create the tuned circuit, the resonant frequency can be varied, tuning the circuit. A tuned circuit acts as a filter, passing or rejecting signals at its resonant frequency, depending upon how you have them wired up. Tuned circuits are important in radio because they help radios generate and receive signals at a signal frequency. And the whole point there is that if you have a radio, you don't want every single frequency that it can hear coming down the antenna and going into the radio. So the first thing you do when you have an antenna on a radio is to build a circuit there that's resonant around the frequency that you want. And I got to say something more about the resonance. Everybody's taken a yardstick and put it on a table and firmly hold the very end of it on that table and kind of thwang it, you know, pull it down just a little bit, and you kind of got to be careful how you do it. And if you got most of the yardstick hanging off the table, the resonant frequency will be the roll that you hear as you twang it off the end of that table. If you change it to where half of it is on and half of it is off, still holding the end on the table so it doesn't fly off there, and you pull it down a little bit, it bends, and you let it go, and you hear a certain frequency sound. If you shorten it just by another half, you'll hear a different sound. And that different sound, since you have a shorter amount hanging off the table, will sound higher. And I encourage everybody to grab a yardstick or a spoon or whatever you got and go try that. It's a little harder with a spoon, I guess, but a knife, any kind of thing that is long and bendable. And it will have a different resonant frequency. One thing I like to do when I'm showing kids this is I put it just on, you know, just barely on the table, and I hold that part. And as they twang it, I pull it back, and all of a sudden you hear a brrrr, and it goes up. And I say, why? And the whole idea is to show that the shorter the length, the higher the resonant frequency, it will vibrate at a certain frequency. This comes into play. Everybody has heard about the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, and there's two things that they did to that bridge that caused it that it was built to handle 50 or 75 mile an hour winds. I don't remember exactly. You can look it up on YouTube. There's some really good videos on it. And it was built to handle much higher wind frequencies, but on this one day, they had frequencies or wind speeds just about 38.7 to 42.6 miles per hour. And I don't know what the actual number is. Please forgive me. But the bridge started to resonate with that. And it's like it got a little push. Every time it went one way, it'd get pushed just a little bit higher, And then when it'd swing back, the push would be there and push it that way a little bit higher. So this thing started twisting and shaking. And finally, the bending back and forth. Well, what happens to any metal when you bend it back and forth? It eventually heats up and fails. And it did. It failed catastrophically. And the engineers were baffled at first. But it's all because that bridge was built with a certain resonant frequency. And one of the things that they did was they found that if you put, after that happened, if you put side panels on so the wind can't go straight through the structure, that changes the resonant frequency and you don't have to worry about that. And they didn't have that on the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. Gosh, I'm just rambling. I hope everybody's getting something out of this. So everything has a resonant frequency. And that resonant frequency comes into play through straight Ohm's law. I said that wrong. That resonance comes into play whenever there's an AC waveform and you have inductive reactance and capacitive reactance, and they work together. And in the early radios, that's how they got things to oscillate at the frequency they wanted. They picked the right capacitor and the right inductor so that they would get the frequency they wanted. And we're not up to, I don't know why they throw this in here, but we're not up to the math for that yet, and I don't think you have to know it for the tech. But I think that's enough for tonight. If there are any questions or anybody wants to say anything, or if I completely confused anybody, please call now.
I thought that was great, actually. There was some good stuff there that you said that I didn't know about, so I appreciated that.
I appreciated it too, Terry. I do have a question for you. Apparently, everything has a resonant frequency, but you can change it.
Yeah, you can change just like a yardstick. However much you're hanging off the table determines what the resonant frequency that you'll hear when you twang it. Yes, you can control it. In electrical circuits, like I was talking about a while ago, you have a variable capacitor or a variable inductor. You can change it on the fly in that circuit. Is that kind of what you were saying?
Yeah, or a yardstick. You can dampen it by shortening it and controlling the motion. So you can dampen the frequency.
Well, you're not only dampening it, but if you listen real close, it makes a lower frequency sound when you have most of it hanging off, and a higher frequency sound when you have most of it on the table. And that's just a fun experiment to try.
Mm-hmm. When people say that every human and every animal has a frequency, a resonance frequency, that can be changed. So it's not a constant, and I just always wonder why people keep insisting on that. Because it's not a constant.
It's not a constant, but I would like to give you the other side. In the right position, your arm has a certain resonant frequency that radio waves will affect it in one way. If you put it up against your body, it's more like whatever the resonant frequency of your body is. So as you move about, different parts of your body will have different resonances to a particular frequency. Is it all the same? No. Are some of them closer? Yes. It's more like they're grouped. We are mainly about 2 meters tall. I mean, lots of us are less than 2 meters tall, and some of us are more than 2 meters tall. So anything on 2 meters, which, lo and behold, is a VHF band, is kind of resonant with the body because that's how tall we are. We're roughly 5 or 6 feet. And so you kind of get a resonance dip right there. on our bodies. We tend to absorb a radio frequency that's on that frequency. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But if you thicken up your body, let's say your torso, by crossing your arms over your chest or holding your arms down over or pulling your legs, knees up, belly, then you've changed. You've changed the thickness of the body to resonate. And
possibly.
You can't just set it and forget it, in other words. Because it is changing.
Right, that's true.
That's good.
But also, radio frequency waves penetrate skin and will go into your body. You haven't changed the length of your Achilles tendon, let's say. Protect it a little more, but you haven't changed the length of your large colon. You haven't changed the length of your aorta. So, disease. All of these might have a bit different frequency.
I don't know what that noise. Only birds chirping here, so I don't know what the disturbance is.
Okay, I'm sorry. Maybe it's me. I'm nervous to talk. All right, are there any other questions? Thank you, Helena.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
This has been the NLA HamNet. The NLA HamNet is here to discuss things NLA-ish, National Liberty Alliance. You can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and look on committees, Ham Communications Plan, and see what we're talking about. And anything NLA or anything that has to do with ham radio. It's held every week on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. My name is Terry. I'm from Colorado. That's where I am now. And my call sign is KI0RE, Kilo India, Zero Romeo Echo. And I appreciate everybody's participation tonight. And I hope you've been enlightened in some way. And I'll say that the net is now closed. Thank you very much, Carl. You can go ahead and stop the recording.